All right, so here we go. Step 8, willingness to make amends. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The big book states, we have made a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. In discussing the approach to others and the reason for making amends, even to those we dislike, AA sources emphasize the following verse. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his neighbor, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he has seen, how can he love God, whom he has not seen? The Way of the Wizard by Deepak Chopra, 20 Spiritual Lessons for Creating the Life You Want. Understanding the Lesson. The power of purity. The word love is used in many ways, but it is a sacred word, because love is that which dissolves all impunities, leaving only the true and the real. As long as you have fear, you cannot really love. As long as you have anger, you cannot truly love. As long as you have selfish ego, you cannot truly love. However impure you are, love will still seek you out and work on you until you can love. However impure you are, love will still seek you out and work on you until you can love. Love seeks out impurity in order to burn it away. There is no such thing as a loveless person. There are only people who cannot feel the force of love. Being invisible and ever-present, love is more than an emotion or a feeling. It is more than pleasure or even ecstasy. Love is the air we breathe. It is the circulation in every cell. From its universal source, love permeates everything. It is the ultimate power, because without using force, love brings everything to it. Even in suffering, love's power continues to work far out of sight of the ego and mind. Compared with love, all other forms of power are feeble. Be able to see the world in the light of love, which only comes from within. Live without fear, in unshakable peace. To get love, you must first give it. So that's eighth step. Step 8 is about love. Eighth step is about the love of God and the love of your fellows, and being willing to clean yourself up. to do what they ask you to do in step 8, which is to be of maximum service to God and the people about you. But I must first get ready. This other book that we've been talking about all week talks about an unclean temple. God does not dwell in an unclean temple. That's why there's religions that have confession. That's why we do 4 through 9 to clean house, to clean us up. Very powerful step, 8 and 9. They put 8 and 9 together in the book because they go together. They're like roommates. And you start out with making a list of all people you had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Initially, in the beginning of my recovery, actually in my first piece of work, I was given a sign system in relations to completing amends. And I was urged and I was prompted to finish every single amends. It was also brought to me that any amends that I had could be made. So I proceeded forth, and that first set of amends was very interesting for me because I was of, oh ye of little faith, because I had lived in the lifestyle of drug addiction, dishonesty, all the stuff that goes with the diseased piece of my being. I had lived there for so long. The only desire I had was not to shoot dope again. And my first set of amends freed me. My first set of amends let me know I could live life differently. So what do you do with that process? You simply create a list. And it's another piece of a spiritual process. So all through the work, you're leading into whatever you do with prayer, being your immediate, initial beginning to any piece in the 12 steps. So you pray, and you should already have a partial list from your inventory in your 5th step that you've done. And you add to that list and you put down anybody or any institution, financial restitution, any harm that you might have or you did do, and I say might have, because there's been times going through pieces of work where I've had to go back to people and clear the air. Because I felt something wasn't right between us, but I couldn't see or remember having done anything to them, but there was this thing. And it had been and is a desire to be right with you guys, to be right with God. In that piece that we just wrote, how can a man says he loves God and he don't love his fellows? Again, we're basing the 12-step process on these elders and these early pioneers of AA that used the good book as a guide and the basis for creation of the recovery process. It was an awesome experience for me. I'm not going to talk about mine. I want you to talk about yours. Who's had experience with step 8 and 9? Okay. Hands down. Who's had experience with completing steps 8 and 9? Who had experience with completing steps 8 and 9? Whoa. So a lot of people raised their hand and said they had experience with 8 and 9, right? Raise your hand. And then I said, who's had experience with completing steps 8 and 9? And who's the two people that raised their hand? 1, 2, 3.
4.
4. Interesting. So those of you that did not complete 8 and 9, and I'll talk to 9 a little bit after, what happened? Let's get some dialogue going. Yeah. Yeah, but I'd like to hear about your own personal experience with being in 8. And if you completed 8, did you move into 9? Yes. And if you didn't finish 9, which a lot of you said you didn't finish 9, what happened? Yeah.
And so the last amends that I owe, I had tried to get in contact with her using her phone, but I found out recently, actually not too long ago, that she's in jail.
So, I got a question for you. Are you in treatment? How long you clean?
A little over a year.
A little over a year. First piece of work?
First time through the steps.
Okay.
Yeah.
You made a list in your 8th step?
Mm-hmm.
You were thorough?
Mm-hmm.
And you got one amends left?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the amends?
To a girl that I had sexual relations with that I manipulated and used.
Mm-hmm.
Through and through.
And you haven't made it yet? That's the only one you got left.
Mm-hmm.
So why haven't you made it?
Well, I haven't made approaches over the phone. She's in jail.
So why haven't you made it?
I haven't made any other moves on it.
What else can you do?
I guess I can go to the jail.
What else can you do?
Seek guidance.
You can go to the jail, right? What else can you do? Book tells us. Somebody tell him loud. Everybody say it. Write a letter.
Just as soon as she gets it.
You got one amends. You not holding that amends. That amends is holding you. How long you had it?
The
amends? Yeah, the one amends. Yeah, how long?
2 or 3 months that I was sober.
Uh-huh.
From then on, 9 months or so.
You've had that one amends for 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
What does the book say about successful consummation of all the steps? Successful finishing. You have one amends left that you could have made a week or so after you had it. So why haven't you made it? Honestly.
I mean, it is a very scary amends. And I thought what I had done was justifiable enough for us to approach. Not that I had finished or done the amends, but at the time.
What's so scary about it?
You know, just the relationship I had with this girl, very dark. A lot of bad things that happened between us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, passage of the STD and just a lot of things I had done to cause discord within her, and she, it was sort of abusive in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides. But,
sort of?
It was, absolutely was.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just call a spade a spade. Right. So, regardless of what it was and what it entailed, do you need to make that amends?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you haven't because you haven't. Fear. Can you live like that? So, are you in 10, 11, and 12, or what are you doing? But you haven't finished amends. Each step is meant to be completed. And there's a way you can do that. Who else?
I
was in 8 and 9 and did not complete? Or what happened?
I was going to... I've done all my amends except one person, and it's my stepdaughter, and she lived with me while she was growing up. And she is in recovery now, and I wanted to make amends to her, and she's not ready.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, when she's ready...
You asked her?
Yeah.
You asked her?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, until she's ready, have you asked God how else could you make that amends to complete it?
No.
Right.
I just think that it's going to happen.
Right. Might happen 10 years from now. Can you wait that long?
No, I don't think it works like that.
No. There we go thinking.
Right?
There we go thinking. Any amends... The steps are meant to get in and get out.
Yeah.
I have to access power, right? I have to align myself with Spirit. We have 12 steps that get me to do that. And each one of them needs to be completed. There's a way for you to make that amends until your daughter is willing to listen. You follow me? Just ask God. Maybe you can go and volunteer at a recovery home that has young women in it and share your experience. Maybe you can help feed the homeless. I don't know.
Things, yes.
Yeah.
We were really, really tight. You know? Mm-hmm. I love her. She's early sobriety, and I'm just not ready.
Yeah, and I understand that perfectly. What I'm saying to you, though, is that each step is meant to be completed. Yeah, in the meantime. It's like when you write a letter, right? If he was to write a letter to the girl in prison, he would like write the letter and make an amends. But if he ever ran into her face-to-face again?
I do. I see her all the time.
No, I'm talking about him.
Oh.
If he was ever to see her again face-to-face, he would make that amends face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
Each amends are meant to be made face-to-face whenever possible. I made an amends to my second son's mother in that first batch of amends I had. I didn't see her again for 15 years. I made it over the phone, right? And I talked to Derek, and I went to spend... one holiday with him. He was living in D.C. And he said, oh, by the way, my mother's going to be here. I hadn't seen her in 30 years. First thing I did when I walked through the door was say, hey, hello, how you doing? Can I talk with you?
So in the meantime, what you're telling me is to go ahead and, you know, do other things, write a letter, whatever. And when she's ready, I can make the amend. But
and
I can
you know.
Continue on with 10, 11, 12.
And she won't tell you. God will tell you.
God
will tell you when the time is right. Yeah. But you want to finish your piece of work. Why? Because I got to get free. To do what? Talk about a spiritual experience. That's all. As a result of a spiritual awakening, I carry this message. That's all we do. Somebody's waiting to hear you about that experience with your daughter. I don't know who, I don't know when, but I've been doing this long enough to know that. Somebody's waiting to hear you. Who else has made a list, got on a pat like this, huh? Yeah. What happened?
Too painful.
Too painful? For who? For them?
For me.
For you? You want to share about it with us?
Not right now.
You don't?
I will when it's time.
You will when it's time?
When I can.
When you can. Anybody got any feedback for him on that? That's completed amends. Nobody's got any feedback? I mean, I do, but I'm trying to give you all a shot.
How free do you want to be?
Who else?
You'd be amazed if we're halfway through.
Who else got feedback for him?
The others doesn't mean us.
Huh?
The others doesn't mean us.
Whoa. What else?
Reminding ourselves we made a commitment to go to any lengths to have a spiritual experience.
Whoa. Let's go. Let's get rolling. Come on, we rolling now.
Take the bit in the teeth. Mm-hmm.
Come on. It's in here. It's too many of us in here not to be in here to help him. We need to help him. We are our brother's keeper.
It's a life or death errand.
Is it about feelings?
God already loves you.
Don't get scared now. Is it about feelings?
No.
No. What am I doing in step 9? What's the intent? I just talked about it a little bit earlier. What's the intent behind step 9?
Get ourselves to be in maximum service. To
yeah,
God.
Somebody look at top of 77.
Uh-huh.
Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Is it about being of maximum service to me? Because it's how, I don't know, am I getting too harsh here?
I mean, we've all seen individuals who get stuck on this, and the basic principle here is there's no conscious awareness that me making this amends has anything to do with drinking, shooting dope, or smoking crap. So it's not me. If you see
but,
a connection between the two, you're going to make the amends. It doesn't matter.
So that's where we... Is this about me drinking or shooting dope again?
That's what the books say.
I don't care what step you're in. Is it about me drinking or shooting dope again? Come on, y'all is awake. Y'all going to sleep now?
I mean, no, not really.
It's not?
I don't feel like it is for me.
Oh.
That was just a symptom of
huh?
the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was a solution for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's about how I think, treat other people, and carry myself through the world, right?
Uh-huh. So, let me ask you a question. If I don't physically shoot dope, am I shooting dope? Do I have to physically shoot dope to shoot dope?
I mean, if it's...
Not if you're still consumed with self-centered fear, no. If you're still doing everything to fucking serve yourself, it's the same thing as being a fucking addict, using a drink, it's the same fucking thing.
And you're doing what?
Whatever
shooting dope.
Mm-hmm.
You're shooting dope.
Yeah.
So I don't have to physically stick a spike in my neck to be shooting dope. What was that? What was that?
I said no, but it's more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't know about that. Because when I was shooting dope, I wasn't crazy as a Betsy Buck. Because I get fixed.
Right.
I'll sit in here and not do no work.
And get worse.
Right.
And get worse.
Yeah. Way worse.
For me, that's shooting dope. 18, middle paragraph 152, 151, bottom, last paragraph, four horsemen. When that stuff is on me, if something don't happen, I'm going to shoot dope.
And the book talks about it's better to take those risks than not to take the risk of discomfort. And it goes on to say it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruin and slander. I'm on page 80. He said that he had to place the outcome in God's hand or he would soon start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow.
But maybe you can live with that. That pain. Oh, well, not maybe. You living with it, right? Maybe it's not that bad that you got to get free from it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I talked about, he said, no, I'm going to leave the thorn in your side. I ain't taking it out. I don't know. I just know I was prompted to make every single amends and make them now. So I made amends trips. I went back to dope dealers. Two sets that had contracts on me. Two different sets. Thousands of dollars. You had people in the rooms tell their sponsee, oh, you can't make amends like that. Joe said, go. Go with God. Not Joe, Elton. Said, go. Go with God. Walked into the lion's den twice. Nobody killed me. Nobody hurt me. Nobody set me up. My thinking as to what I think is going to happen keeps me trapped. Man, we've been talking about my thinking all weekend, right? I think. I don't know. A couple of those I thought, too. Mickey Collins, he loved to hurt people. He was a bully and a gangster in the neighborhood. But I owed him. But by the time I got to step 9 and that first piece of work, I was thoroughly convinced if I didn't do it, I was shooting dope again. It's about getting loaded. I didn't know it as crystal clear as I know it now. I thought it was about physically getting loaded. Now I know it's about being sitting in these rooms, a bump on a log, a dead man, loaded in my mind. No help to myself, and no help to that new man that comes through that door that needs us. They need somebody that's clear about what the recovery process is about. Clear. And if you're not clear, they have from page 76 all the way to page 83 that talks about different situations and things you can do. Then hopefully you have some people in your life you've given spiritual license that you trust completely that you can talk to. That have walked the path before you. Bless you. Who else?
I want to share something with the men's. The thing I've learned, my experience has been, these amends that we make that are wrapped around this resentment that we've held for so many years, when we go to that person and make the amends, we get free of that belief system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's been the gift I've seen from it.
The gift that I got from my first set of amends was very simple. They told me for years, I even saw some people that lived by it, but I hadn't. Ever. The first gift I got was God is. Why? Because I walked into the lion's den and walked out. I had preconceived notions about amends. I don't want to talk too much about it tonight because I never know what I'm going to speak about when I speak. Never. But amends is a process. Amends is the ultimate surrender. It's the ultimate surrender to God, to trust God that wherever you go and whoever it is that you need to talk to, He will go before you and set the path. That's why you pray before you make the phone call to set up the amends. When you get to the appointment that you have set up, before you go in, you pray. And there's a formal way to make amends. And you've heard it over and over. You just don't say you're sorry. No. It's a way we make amends. And again, what's behind it is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. The lady in Saks Fifth Avenue said, "My God." She looked at me like I was an alien. Where'd you come from? Nobody's ever walked in here and admitted that they've walked in here and they have stole from us on a regular basis. Where'd you come from? And I said, "Well, I live in Los Angeles now. I was back in New York making the amends. I live in L.A. now, and I've been in a recovery process. And in that recovery process, I did some work, and I saw some resentments and some harm that I've done to some people, and this store was in my amends deal, and I needed to come back and make amends to this store." And like I said, she looked at me like I had three heads. Because people don't do what we do. You'll be amazed how freeing what we do can be for other people. You set other people free. Some people are stuck in the idea that this world is wretched and chaotic, unloving, unkind. Nobody does the next right thing. And for one of us to come in front of them and humble ourselves and trust God, that's why I say the ultimate surrender, I'm totally trusting God that he will take care of me. And I made the amends to her. I told her the harm I did, and was there any other harm? And she said, "Yeah, you know it. Prices go up when people come in and boost and steal stuff, and you know it's hard on the consumer." And we went through all that and went through the formal amends. And she said, "No, there's nothing that you could do to make it right. This is an awesome experience for me." She said, if you lived in New York, I would offer you a job." She said, "We need more people like you working here."
That's cool.
Just imagine how I felt. And I saw exactly what we talk about and what's talked about in the rooms by some of us. I saw it come into realization right in front of my eyes. How we change people with our behaviors and what we do when we're drinking and using, and we go back and make amends, and they transform right in front of your eyes. Who else has had an experience with amends that they'd like to talk about? Yeah.
I mean, it took me 8.5 years to make 230. I will have to say that the amends process has proven to me the ripple effect that we do not see in our actions. Because we're so self-centered, we think we're only hurting really one person. We don't see the collateral damage. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stories to tell, and most of the people in this room have heard this story, but I'm going to say it anyway, is I was, I slept with my best friend's fiance, and I devastated a whole circle of friends, and I had to go make amends to everybody in that circle of friends. I don't know if you remember this. In 2010, when you came here, you asked all of us to bring this artifact that had meaning to it. Mm-hmm. And I made my amends with the couple, with both of them. And he gave me that crystal pendant that I brought that night. Mm-hmm. And that was the power of this program, because that's something that the average people in society don't think stuff like that can be cleaned up and amended. But what happened was, in that circle of friends, there was this couple. They were married. And the girl would house sit for them, and we would rendezvous it at their place. Unbeknownst to me, we'd left a used condom there. Mm-hmm. So I made this amends in 2008, so I'm pushing on 4 years. They got closure because they found that used condom, and for 4 years, they distrust each of them thought the other person perhaps had cheated. So when I showed up to make that amends, having no idea what closure I was about to give these people, mm-hmm. I saw the ripple effect. We, you know, I can't tell you the number of amends that followed after that, where I was there to make clean up something specific, and when I asked them, you know, two important questions: is there something I left out, or do you want to talk about how this made you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something when the big book says our grosser handicaps will be cast out. You know, the miracle of 6 and 7 for a lot of people happens in the actions of 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to look in someone in their eyes and you see, and sometimes we didn't do this shit fucked up either.
Mm-hmm.
There were no drugs and alcohol involved in some of the stuff that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see what our selfishness and our self-centeredness does to people who look them in the eye. So the grosser handicaps, like the stealing and the flat-out lying, a lot of that stuff gets cast out. But then the addict takes on a new face deep down inside. He starts to show up in other areas in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, man, my sponsor held my hand the entire time through those first 8 steps.
Mm-hmm.
And learning how to trust God happens in making amends.
It does. It does.
It's the ultimate surrender. Who else? I want some dialogue. I want some interaction by you guys. Yeah.
I just recently made what I considered like my toughest amends, mm-hmm. maybe not even a month ago, and had a pretty incredible experience. I just figured maybe I should share it. But was my son's mother. I lived with her at her parents' house for about 3 years, about the last 3 years when I was real bad. And, you know, so these people not only provide me a place to live and help with my son, but they're hardworking, honest, very good people that I really look up to today. Came to this country with nothing, started from scratch, worked their asses off for years and years, and they're doing pretty well now. Well, in the height of me being a strung out junkie, I was in her parents' room getting something, and I found an envelope full of cash, just full of $100 bills, a few thousand, right? Bad thing for a junkie to find, right?
So bad.
And so, yeah, so over the course of, I don't even know, a year, you know, I didn't take anything for, I would just go and take like $100. Well, maybe they don't notice, maybe they don't mm-hmm. notice. So it ended up being like a countless amount of money that they worked hard for. And thousands of dollars. And these people, like I said, I was living under the roof. Her mom was cooking me dinner. Like after I work, you know, just not mm-hmm. cool. So,
mm-hmm.
Long story short, Tarek was actually after the wall. Then, after I heard Bill speak, I was driving back. I was supposed to pick up my little boy the following Sunday, and his mom texted me. He's like, "Hey, I need you to pick him up from my parents tomorrow." I was like, "Damn, all right, okay." You know, it's like heavy on me. So I called my sponsor, prayed about it, go in, and my son was with his grandma out of the store, so it was just me and her dad, really nice guy. We're sitting there, and like, heart racing, I'm like, all right, that's it, you know? So anyway, like, I told him individually, and kind of the same thing. She had a little brother. They weren't sure if it was him or me. I think they kind of figured it out for a long time. Over the course of time, they didn't know if it was their own son stealing money or not. And Manny told me, like, don't worry about the money, you know? And then he didn't think I was a bad person. And then he didn't know I was a good guy all that time. And just incredible. And we talked about some things, you know, that I can do for my son. We kind of made it right on his end. And then her mom got back. And it was so crazy how it was set up for me to talk to them separately. So I talked to her dad, and I was kind of like, put my son in his car seat. Her mom went back outside to get some groceries, and I was like, can I talk to you for a second? You know, I just talked to Wilson and told her, you know, because it was actually in her stuff, the money that I was taking. And she, like, looked, and I swear, like, I told her, she's like, she grabbed her heart, she said, for me, it's not the money. And she looked, like, behind me, my little boy was, like, in his car seat, like, looking right out the window, and I turned around, and she's just like, take care of the little boy, and just tears started streaming, and she gave me a hug, and like, I don't even know. Like, I can't, words can't do it justice, but it's just crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I never thought that those people, like, I didn't, they don't have to forgive me. I mean, what I did in my eyes was unforgivable, but anyway, that was very recent. So.
Who else? Yeah.
2011, the woman that I was married to asked me to leave. And for the better part of 2 years, she couldn't have any regular communication with me without yelling or inserting how she felt about me. And when I finally made amends to her in 2013, that freed me up to then start engage in another relationship with another woman who I'm now married to. But to me, that amend was so powerful because of now 4 years later from that amend, and that same woman that kicked me out that wanted nothing to do with me happens to be in a relationship or was in a relationship with another alcoholic. And the person that she was calling for advice on how to handle the situation, the person that she was calling to have come change the locks at her house because she was afraid of him coming in, the person that she was confiding in through that process was me. And if I don't make that amend and don't open that pathway for the healing, she's doing this on her own with somebody that she can't trust. And and to me, the power of that comes not directly from her, but in the peripheral conversations I hear of, you know, my daughter, who was 4 years old when we split, now that she's older, wanting to understand why mom got rid of dad as I know him now, the better man, and for her to explain to my daughter that the man that is your dad today was not the man that I was married to. He is a new person. And that, to me, none of that could have happened if I didn't start to repair that relationship. It's not, it won't ever fully be repaired, but if I didn't make that amend, that the cultivation of that repaired relationship could not have happened. Because she would still be talking to me the way that she did for the first 2 years afterwards. So.
I'd like to share. So in my first inventory, I had a resentment against this guy who molested me. I was 15. He was 28. And I'd like to tell you that I saw in the fourth column that I was seeking attention and I was seeking whatever was in that house. I didn't know what I was going to get. I didn't know that I didn't know. I was 15. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know. But I found out. So I didn't stop going down to that house because it was something for me to benefit going down to that house. Am I making myself clear? Yeah? Okay. So I take it through the columns in my first inventory, and I see that I told that man I was 18 when I was 15. So that's the harm I caused. Tough a man to make. But I had seen the truth about the harm I caused. So I make the appointment in prayer. And I go to this man's house. And it's about 8 years later. No, 11 years later. And he's so happy to see me. So he's 39 now. Huge difference between 28 and 39. And I make this amends to him, and I tell him that the harm I caused is that I told you I was 18 years old when I was only 15. And in that moment, his legs gave out, and he fell to the ground. because he had a 15-year-old daughter. The power in this amen was that maybe some other young girl is safe. Maybe he was able to reconcile with his youth. I completed that amen, asking the appropriate questions, listening, saying no thing. I haven't seen him again since that day. But there was resolve in me, even though I feel that I was the one that was victimized. I'll go to any length. Any length.
Who else? The spiritual life is not a theory.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So I grew up, you know, in New Hampshire, and my family just wasn't, there's not a lot of love in the family. Like, there was the idea, like, okay, a son loves his mom, a son loves his brother and stuff, but, like, just the way we grew up, that feeling was never there. It was this huge disconnect. So I got sober in June of last year, went to make my first trip home in December for Christmas, you know, make the slam dunk, amends to the family kind of deal. And I had a similar experience with my mom, but so my little brother, he was born when I was 4 years old, and like, I've just resented this kid my whole life. There's never been like an emotional connection there ever. I've always wanted one to be there, but it just wasn't. You know, when he was about 12 is when he, you know, I mean, he had always seen, like, physical altercations between me and my mom and my dad, but, you know, that's when he started finding the needles and, you know, just, I mean, obviously I stole from him and stuff like that, but it was really the residual harm that, you know, stemmed from me fighting with my dad, you know, me using in his bedroom when he was at school, you know, leaving spoons and needles and all this stuff. Because he didn't know what to think about it, you know, and all he wanted was love from his brother. And so when I went home and I made that amends, and I asked him, you know, like, how my actions and attitudes made you feel, you know, it got real, and, like, he started crying, and he started telling me, like, all I ever wanted was, you know, like, I've looked up to you my whole life, and I've just wanted a relationship with you. And I could never see why you did the things you did or, like, what, you know, because obviously they don't understand power of choice and stuff like that. He just saw it from the outside looking in, and he always thought it was a reflection of, like, him not being a good brother. You know, and it wasn't until, like, I made this amends and heard how he felt that I had, like, the first actual, like, loving feeling between my brother and I. You know what I mean? And I did share that with my mom, too, but it was, I mean, it was a much deeper level with my mom. You know, I grew up with my parents always saying, you know, you got to love each other because we're going to die someday. You know, that's all you're going to have is your little brother. But it was a pretty incredible experience to, like, I don't know, like, I grew up where emotion was never on the table like that, you know. And that was, like, I mean, that was the rocket ship that led me to trust in God.
Sure. Thank you.
I think we got a couple more minutes. There's something I wanted to read. It's from the original manuscript. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man you are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely will you fail to make satisfactory progress. Your former enemies will sometimes praise what you are doing and wish you well. Occasionally, they will cancel a debt or otherwise offer assistance. It should not matter. However, if someone does throw you out of his office, you have made your demonstration, done your part, it's water over the dam. If taking drastic action is going to implicate other people, they should be consulted. Use every means to avoid widespread damage. You cannot shrink, however, from the final step if that is clearly indicated. If after seeking advice, consulting others involved, and asking God to guide you, there appears to be no other just or honorable solution than the most drastic one, you must take your medicine. Mm. Trust that the eventual outcome will be right. That's the original manuscript. I don't believe it's worded like that in the big book anymore.
Take your medicine.
I have an amazing story I'd like to share, if we have a minute.
Sure.
It's possible I might break down, so I was making amends to my mom, and I had avoided her for several years because she always dropped me off at different places to live. And one of those places I was living, I accidentally picked up a rifle and shot one of my cousins in the head. He didn't die right away. A couple weeks later, they pulled him off the machines, but I had always held that against my mom. And I've been sober for 15 years, and so I had made amends to her on several occasions. Last year, I was making amends to her again, because I want to be free for this stuff. And we were talking about my father. I didn't have a relationship with him very much. And she told me that I am the product of a rape. And I'm not saying that so you feel sorry for me. I'm saying that because I had to make that fucking amends to get free of this shit. So when she told me that, every single fucking grain of resentment I had against that woman just dissolved. No matter how, you know, more fucking ready to do what, you know, the individual who was my biological father, but you know, that's beside the point. He's dead, it'll be easier. But the point is, don't fucking miss this thing because you're afraid. Because I'm afraid now, standing up here fucking telling you this shit. Of course, there's nothing comfortable about this. But I want to be fucking free, man, because I'm a fucking alcoholic and a fucking drug addict. I scratch till it bleeds just because it fucking feels good. And if this shit didn't work, I wouldn't fucking do it. There's just no way. Don't miss out because it's fucking uncomfortable. Just fucking do it. Just fucking charge forward and get it done. Thank you.
We hear this read in every meeting, and I wonder if you really listen to what it's saying. If you are painstaking about this phase of your development, you will be amazed before you are halfway through. You're going to know a new freedom and happiness. You will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. You will comprehend the word serenity and no peace. No matter how far down the scale you have gone, you will see how your experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. You will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in your fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Your whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people, and of economic insecurity will leave you. You will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle you. You will suddenly realize that God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. And we hear them in meetings all the time, nine-step promises. But do you really hear them? Do you really hear what they're telling us? If we are painstaking, what does painstaking mean?
Thorough.
Even if it brings pain, you moving forward. You're going to endure the pain because it's not about you. Again, it's about fitting yourself. There's only one step that talks about drugs and alcohol. That's step one. All the rest talk about God. It's a setup. You're being set up. Why? Probably because you're in the club in the club. And your ass needs to be set up. Because left up to your own devices, you're going to disintegrate. So I need clear-cut directions. I'm not a suggestion guy. I believe suggestion was was used in the Big Book for wimps and poopies. And trap doors for people that really don't want to do this. So Bill and Bob gave you an out. I suggest you do that. No. I was given clear-cut directions. I was told, finish amends. Watch your life. I was told, straighten out your financial debt and watch your life straighten out financially. It happened. Those crews of dope dealers that I owed money, I sent them money back until the debt was paid twice a month. Some of them every week, whenever I could. And my life straightened out. In the beginning of that 12-step process and that first piece of work, I could not have imagined what my life would look like. Couldn't imagine. But I became willing to believe, to step out on the knowingness and the direction and the glow that came from another man against my morals and principles and values. And something happened. I began to cultivate a personal relationship with God. And that's when it really took off in that first piece of work, that ninth step, doing those amends. And it hasn't stopped yet. That's why on a consistent basis, I take a walk through all 12 steps. Because I know God's going to show up. Even more so than he has in the past. He's going to allow me to peel another layer of the onion to get a closer look at him and deepen that personal relationship just a little bit better. and how that happens, he will reveal it to me. Sometimes that means cutting people off that you don't need in your circle. Sometimes that means adding people to your circle. Sometimes that means taking on new tenants to live in life. You actually get to practice patience. And you understand when they say patience is virtue. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Because you actually begin to love you. And for me, that's what this is all about. I grow to love me unconditionally. I accept all of me. I don't beat me up when I make a left instead of making a right. I give me a break. I thank God that in the midst of that experience, he still allows me to breathe. And I'm still breathing. I thank God that in the midst of the storm, now I see the lessons. Do I always heed the lesson? No. Gotten a lot better at it than I was when I got here. So ninth step is the ultimate surrender. For me, it was where God truly, really showed up and prepared the path before me. And miraculous things begin to happen. Is he a miracle worker? Yes, he is. Is he a heart regulator? Yes, he is. Is he the master teacher? Yes, he is. Is he the great physician? Yes, he is. He's all that and more. But you got to be in a position for him to show you that. If you don't ever put yourself in a position for him to show you that, most likely it'd never happen. So I think that's about all I got. I don't know if you got anything else on nine.
No. Let's break.